This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, we're kicking off episode number 601 on our way to who knows how many more. Hopefully, we'll have at least another 600 episodes in us, and I'm looking forward to sharing this journey with you, the listener. I thank you for coming back to week, and I also want to thank in particular those of you who have donated or pledged your financial support and become a friend of the Magic Word. This week, I'd like to welcome the newest member, Ian Scheller. Thank you, Ian, for being a financial donor. I appreciate you contributing a little bit of money our way. That helps keep the podcast going and helps defray some of our expenses. And we appreciate each and every one of you. And thank all of you listeners for coming back and joining us each week. And by the way, speaking of helping us, one way you can do that, of course, is at the on each page of the MagicWordPodcast.com. Towards the bottom, there is a link there for Amazon. So just as a reminder that you can help us because every one of your purchases through Amazon.com, if you click on that affiliate link, we get a little bit of love back from each and every purchase that you would make. So thank you guys very much for remembering to go and click through that Amazon affiliate link. And I am going to do something a little bit different here this week. We are posting this video of the podcast that you're hearing this week. We recorded this actually as a video and posted it on YouTube. So you'll be able to view this if you want to kind of see what we're looking like and what's happening during the time that, well, there are a couple of places in this podcast where Scott Alexander will talk about and show some videos. Well, obviously, we can't show those here on the Audible podcast, and so I cut that out. But you can go to youtube.com/Texas Magician. There you can find the link to this video and others that we have done. We're trying something here a little bit different, as I said, trying to have a little fun on the video side of podcasting here. So there are many, apparently, who like to watch this, and if you do, and you'd like to be one of them, go check that out. And also, if you just subscribe to the Magic Word, that is, if you subscribe to our YouTube channel, Texas Magician YouTube channel, there you will be notified whenever that a new video has been released. I hate to mention this, but it needs to be said because it's the elephant in the room after you start listening to this week's podcast. The audio was stripped out for this podcast from the video, again, that we had posted on YouTube. And specifically, some of the audio is a little bit sketchy. Some of the, you get to hear, unfortunately, a little bit of reverb. There is some echo in the background, I believe, whenever Scott Alexander is talking from time to time. Overall, there is not a problem with most of this, which is why that I left it the way that it was and is, but there is some of this that is really not acceptable and will not be in future episodes, and I wanted to apologize, but I thought this was an important one to get out as soon as I can here, and so there was nothing that could be done as far as trying to eliminate the echo once that the podcast was recorded there. So anyhow, let me just give my apologies up front, and hopefully you'll stick with this, because again, the content is great, although the quality of the sound in some parts is not so great, but we will improve that in the future. So with those apologies, I hope that you will enjoy this week's episode. Well, this week we're going to be talking with not one, not two, but three different people who were those who worked with Denny Haney. The late Denny Haney was a performer and a magic dealer, and there is a new book out called Collected Wisdom, which was authored by Scott Alexander. And as is a rule with this podcast, we really don't promote books particularly or DVDs and things like that or products from other magicians unless there's something that is exceptional about it. In this particular case, it's quite unusual and quite exceptional because Scott Alexander has not only covered the life of Denny, but also gone into a lot of detail about some of the signature effects that Denny was made famous for. Well, I'm really not going to discuss too much more of this because there are so many stories and it's just a lot of fun. I know you're going to enjoy this week's episode. So please welcome Scott Alexander, Puck, and Alan New talking about Denny Haney here on The Magic Word.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and today, you got it, we're going to be talking about Collected Wisdom, the new book that is out that is a biography of the life of Denny Haney and also some of his more famous tricks that he has performed with some explanations, and also there is a place where you can go in and get a QR code to watch some of this stuff then as well. But we're going to be talking with the people who have been involved in Denny's life here today and hear some of the stories from the book and some perhaps that didn't make it in time for the book. And so by saying that, let me introduce someone who has been on this podcast before, and he is someone that many of you have seen perhaps on Penguin Live. He's always one of the favorites around Christmas time with the videos that he does with Dan Harlan. Please welcome my good friend and funny man, Mr. Scott Alexander.
Hey! Thank you.
There he is. Fantastic. So good to glad you made it, Scott. It would not be complete without you being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It would just be me talking about this book, which was basically written by you, I guess. Isn't that right?
Me and Denny. Yeah. Yeah. Me and Denny wrote it. Exactly.
Okay. So it was during his lifetime that he was actually working on this book then, too.
Yeah, we started working on it together, prompted by Mike Close of he was then the editor of MUM Magazine. And about 2011, he said, you know, you should really chronicle Denny's touches and things on his material. Would you like to do it for the magazine? And I was like, well, I asked Denny, and Denny was like, yeah, sure, why not? And then Mike Close was like, and by the end of this, you know, you guys will have a book. I was like, all right. So Denny always wanted to write a book. So we said, all right, let's do it. So we, slowly, ever since 2011, we've been chronicling all of Denny's material, and he's been telling me stories. And I've got like 40 hours of audio and video of Denny talking about his life and his tricks and his touches. So and that we turned that all into a book.
That's something that I know a lot of magicians have been wanting to do for a long time. Of course, Marvin Roy got his book completed, but kind of going along with the life of Marvin Roy, Mr. Electric, Walter Blaney also had started his career about the same time as Marvin did, and Walter was writing a book too. And I was always talking with Walter at lunch, and he would carry around these index cards in his pocket and a pen. And he'd say, that's a good story. As we were talking, I got to remember to put that in the book. Mm-hmm. This was going in the book. He was always saying that. Never got around to it. His eyesight started failing later in life and never got to it. And I wish there would have been someone, I didn't have the time, but there would have been someone like you who would have continued to push Denny and to get stories out of him and to start writing down and chronicling his tricks and his life and everything. And so it's wonderful that this has finally all been put together.
And thanks to Mike Close. He's the one who suggested it. So thank you, Mike.
Yeah. He was the one to kind of push you into that. And I'm sure that he had just a ton of stories, that is, many of which that you have put in this book. And they wouldn't have been complete without some of the people I know that have been instrumental in not only Denny's life, but in yours, who have been some of your good buddies. And I think we got one of them here as well. Do you want to bring him on?
Yeah. I mean, I was for a brief period of time the road manager for Denny and onstage assistant. But the guy who was Denny's onstage assistant, road manager, the guy who got the one who got everything done for Denny back in the day when he was rolling in the corporate world is none other than now the mysterious Mr. Alain New Mentalist. There he is.
There he is. Hey there, Alain. Very good to have you here with us for this podcast then as well. Good to see you.
I don't have the introduction music that Scott has, but great to be here.
There you go.
There you go. You got a friend. I guess, as they said in Monsters, Inc. So you had been working with him. What was your title? What did you actually do with Denny when you were touring with him?
Well, he hired me as a, you know, stage manager, but I was basically his right-hand man. I mean, I did all of the setup and the packing and the onstage work with him. And just like Scott, basically learned from Denny. And it was funny because I was just talking to a friend of mine who has a senior who is looking for a school and being very kind of wondering, you know, what school should I go to and stuff like that. And I started to realize that, you know, it's really not about the school. It's really about the teacher. And, you know, I didn't know what I was getting into when I got involved with Denny. I knew that he was an on-the-road magician, but I had no idea that he was going to be one of the best teachers the world could ever have. And so it's a really, really nice blessing for me to have just stumbled upon it. When I was 18 years old, I was performing at I'd seen Denny perform a few times. And, you know, what was always talked about with Denny, whenever people talked about his magic, they would say that he was really exciting and that he was really and that he was very dynamic. And so when I saw him, it was really just that. I mean, it was just amazing watching, you know, when you're so used to seeing stage magicians move so slowly and suddenly you see Denny with all of this energy, like kind of taking the stage and stuff. It's hard to not completely appreciate that as a performer. And then later on, I was performing at this place called the Great Foodini's. It was actually a short-lived magic nightclub. They actually had two locations in the Washington, D.C. area, one in Fairfax, Virginia, and one in Rockville, Maryland. So there were two sort of suburban locations. But it was created by a guy by the name of Tico Bonomo of Bonomo's Turkish Taffy from Coney Island. And he was the owner of the video game arcade Time Out Amusements. And Time Out actually created the Great Foodini's, and the amazing Randy actually opened the place with the grand opening.
And you're saying food, F-O-O-D, food.
Yeah, it was F-O-O-D-I-N-I, yeah, the Great Foodini.
And that's where you saw Denny for the first time, right?
Was it? And that was when I met Denny for the first time, and where I, you know, told him that I was, you know, an aspiring magician, and he kind of took me under his wing, you know, mainly because I think because I was Vietnamese and he really wanted to have a Vietnamese assistant because he, you know, because he had a Vietnamese assistant, basically.
Right.
And so he was like, yeah, I'll have two Vietnamese working for me.
Two Vietnamese are better than one.
So he basically said, you know, if you want to go on the road with me, just give me a call. And he gave me his business card. And I was thinking at the time, you know, the Great Foodini's got me like on staff as a performer performing, you know, throughout the entire week. So there's no reason for me to go on the road with Denny at this point. And then suddenly the Great Foodini's closed down, and it was a crazy day because I literally walked to work because I lived really close to the place, got there and the doors were boarded up and they had completely shut down. And so then there was a note on the door saying, meet us at the Holiday Inn, we're all drinking. And so
How many years was that open?
It was open for an entire 8 months.
8 months.
Yeah, during which the amazing Randy was there, Harry Maurer was there, Denny was there, Craig Diamond and his then assistant Crystal was there. What was his name? That old magician from New York who did the crazy dove act. Baxter.
It wasn't Brent, was it?
No. It was Baxter. Bobby Baxter. Bobby Baxter. That guy was nuts. He literally had me backstage with, he had 18 doves with him. I think he only used one in his act. And he basically had me take this entire cage of doves. He goes, take them one at a time and throw them at the curtain. And the one that comes back to you is the one that I'll take. So I had to sit there throwing doves at the curtain, hoping that one would come back to me without falling on the ground.
So. That's pretty funny. Well, I tell you what, in order to kind of round this out, we need to bring in just one more person, I think, also was involved with all this. And it might be someone you know pretty well, too, Ilan.
In fact, indeed, he's the third brother of this little group of Denny and Lee survivors.
I guess I got to get that intro music. Okay.
Yeah.
First, an AA group.
Yeah. Get ready. You've seen him on cruise ships. You've seen him on AGT. It is the master magician, Malcolm Puckering.
Hey, I got music.
I could have given you this one.
Well, one is well deserved. Sure. Welcome, Puck. I'm glad that you're here joining us then as well. When did you first get to meet Denny?
Oh, wow. I was working at Barry Taylor's magic shop out in Wheaton, Maryland, and I wanted to find a vanishing birdcage. And he told me about this guy, Denny, who had retired from magic, and he had opened up his magic studio and turned it into a shop, and to call him and he might have something that I needed. So I called him, And he did. He got on the phone. He said, yeah, come on down. And I've got the cage, you know. So I drove down. It's about an hour drive. And I got to the shop and I met Denny. It's a crazy story. I won't go into it because it's a little R-rated. But in any event.
Has that stopped you in the past?
If you want to hear it, I'll tell it.
Well, I could probably edit out as necessary, whatever. But.
Well, I got down to the shop and this is in Essex, Maryland, which is a very very strange area, especially for the brothers. So anyway, so I walk into the shop. I open a door and he had a glass counter and I see this person behind the counter, but his back is to me and his pants are down to his knees and it's just his bare butt. And on the counter was a plate of spaghetti. There was a plate of spaghetti on the counter and in the crack of his butt was a plastic fork. And he was squatting down trying to stab a meatball with his butt. And this I saw opening the door to the magic shop for the first time. And I was petrified. I was like, do I run? What do I do? But I really wanted that cage. You know, so
you're wondering what kind of trick that he actually sold.
It's
what
like was he doing? Bet Steve he couldn't pick up the meatball with his butt crack, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he bet Steve that he couldn't do this. So
the ad from Genie magazine with Steve's butt. On the back cover, that controversial ad about is this your magic dealer? They were talking about that ad, and they were talking about Steve's, plumber's crack.
It was born from Steve's butt. So so anyway, I went in, I bought the cage, and while I was there, he showed me some different things. He asked me if I had any books, and he pushed showmanship for magician. He pushed some different books on me. He told me about billiard balls, manipulation. So I ended up, falling in love with the shop and I would go, once every couple of weeks, I'd take the drive down and hang out with him. And then I heard through the grapevine that Denny was looking for an assistant because Alan had got booked into the Showboat. So he wasn't going to be able to work with him anymore. So I drove down and I auditioned for the job pretty much. He took me to the basement and we put his door to Dawn up on the sword suspension. And I guess I did well because the next morning I was at 6 a.m, I was in front of his shop. In his van driving to our first gig and I knew nothing of what I was getting myself into. And he pretty much taught me the show in the ride to the show. So that was my introduction to working in the Denny.
And you were about
show.
How old then?
Oh, wow. I was
I was like 18. So you were what?
No, I was older. I was older because I moved to Maryland probably in my late 20s. So I was probably about 30.
10 years. So by the time I was out of Denny and Lee, I was 28. So,
yeah, I was probably in my 30s because, I'm 54 now. So, yeah, it's about 25 years ago. Yeah, it's probably in my early 30s.
You're older than Scott.
Yeah.
Wow. You mean that Scott, not this Scott.
Black don't crack.
Oh, so Scott, I don't think that you had mentioned when it was that you had first met Denny. Actually,
story's in the book. But basically, when I was about 10 years old, I wanted a magician for my birthday party, and Denny was the only one in the phone book. So my folks called Denny, and he was busy. He was booked that day. But 2 weeks later, in the mail. Out of the blue, I got a signed photograph saying, I hope you have a great birthday, Scott. Sorry I couldn't be there, Denny and Lee. And I'm like, oh, that was nice. And then 4 years after that, I'm probably 14 years old, and Raymond, the magician, introduced me to Denny for the first time. And I'm looking at Denny going, I know this guy from somewhere. Where do I know him from? And it turns out he was the guy from the picture when I was a kid that I had on my wall for years. Wow. So, yeah, that's how I met him, through Raymond. And then when I was working at Barry's Magic Shop that Puck mentioned in Wheaton, and that's where I met Puck and Alan both in Wheaton. And we all kind of then gravitated towards Denny as soon as Denny opened up his shop around 93. We all kind of migrated over there. And I met Denny again at the shop when he had opened it. And he was looking for somebody to fill in to, do Alan's job because he was leaving. And
Denny didn't open his shop in 93.
Yeah, he did. Well, he opened it a little earlier than that, but it wasn't really a full-fledged magic shop, like open to the public until about then. But he had opened it earlier, and it kind of like he started out basically as a place to hang out where he would store his stuff. And then it eventually developed into
Are you talking about? Well, I know we had that little shop. Okay,
you're right. I guess you're right. I guess it was 93. That's so crazy.
I know. I know. Yeah. Trust me. Trust me. I did the research.
You wrote the book. You ought to know.
Yeah, so I ended up doing
literally.
I ended up doing up the onstage work.
No, you're. Yeah.
And right. So all three of us were Denny, and you know, all three of us were Denny's onstage assistant and road manager. Denny was the onstage assistant and road manager for a magician, carnival talker named Jeff Halen. And so Denny was.
I always called him my grandpa.
Yeah, grandpa, Grandpa Galen. Yeah, yeah.
Now, did you guys travel with him then for his college tours, or was it corporate? Or, I mean, Alon, you did.
Yeah, I was college, and Puck and I were corporate mainly. He'd been with the colleges by then.
Okay. When he was
it's
doing
corporate. How you quit the colleges.
What's that?
Some people never quit the colleges, but some people just do.
Yeah, yeah.
You did most all of your life, it seems like, Alon.
I have, and I still do a few, but I don't do as many. I seem to be quitting the colleges. I think it's my age. I'm not sure what's going on.
It's like,
I think the colleges are quitting me. I'm not sure.
But I remember talking with Denny many years ago when he said that he had thought he had pretty much capped out on this as high as he could go and winning whatever awards and making as much money as he could working the college circuit. And so I said, why are you open a magic shop? He said, because I felt like that was the next thing to do. And he said, if I would have had the hindsight I do now, I would never have left because that market continued to grow long after he left, and he could have continued there longer and made more than what he was making in the magic shop. But he seemed to be satisfied and happy there at the shop.
Yeah, he had kind of, by that point, he had really kind of been there, done that, got the t-shirt, got the coffee mug, you know, and he was just kind of looking for, he loved magic and he wanted to be surrounded by magic. So what better than to open up a magic shop and live there?
I mean, yeah.
You know, he just kind of did it because he really, really passionately loved magic. So.
Yeah.
That's true. He was, he did love it enough that he actually had opened up another place then over in Las Vegas, yeah. Which again, it's like, okay, that you're not making enough money here to do this one. Let's go have another money losing venture.
Denny had accumulated so much money as of like 1992 or three, he had a crap load of money. I'm talking fat stacks of cash. And he just decided, you know, I gave my kids houses. He gave both of his kids houses. He paid for He bought all the magic crap that he ever wanted in life. And he was like, I'm going to start giving back to the magic community and open up a magic shop. And slowly over the next 20 years, that savings that he built up dwindled down and dwindled down and dwindled down. And he kept dumping it into the shop. And, you know, by the end, he was like, all right, peace out. There you go. I hope I helped some people.
So he really wasn't investing that so much as it was he was sitting on it and spending it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. But he got into magic shops though at a really good time because that's when people were doing a lot of mail order and you had like the Brad Birds and you know and all of the different mail order shops. And Denny did really well. But once the internet came in, that's when everything fell apart because then they didn't have to have physical shops anymore to pay overhead and mortgage and rent. They basically were working out of their basement and they were drop shipping things. So Denny really had to have a brick and mortar shop. It wasn't very feasible, you know, towards the end. So it really got tough.
And it was kind of the same thing where he decided to get out of the colleges and the corporates, you know, back in the early 90s when he opened the shop. Same thing. When in the college and corporate market, right around the early 90s, all the agents were booking with videotapes. I got to see your videotape. I need to see your videotape. Can I see your videotape? I'll be the judge of how good you are.
Right. Well,
Denny had relied for the past 30 years on simply letters of recommendation and word of mouth.
But now his reputation, yeah.
Right? So he was like, screw it. I'm not doing that. Same thing with the magic shop. He opened the website, had one of the very first magic shops, if not the first magic shop that had a website, a brick and mortar shop that had a website, ran that for a couple of years, was great. Then the internet started changing. Everything started switching to downloads and switching to virtual and visual. And, you know, no more, you know, brick and mortar, not going to go and order from the store. Don't send in your check or money order. And he didn't want to change that either. He was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to work on the old model. So he reaches a certain point where he goes, eh, screw it. You know, I've done enough. And then that's kind of the end of that.
Yeah. The one trick DVD ended it all. Yeah.
Yeah.
I oftentimes wonder whether or not that's like something that happens to old magicians, because like it's interesting how like with Denny, we got to see him all the way to the end pretty much. With a lot of magicians who get old and kind of fall off, it's really interesting because I know at least a handful that I know right now are still alive, and I reach out to them from time to time just because I want to, you know, just really just out of having loved talking with them and discussing with them ideas and stuff in the past. And some of these guys won't even return my phone calls anymore or anything. And I'm sure that they've got things going on and stuff like that. But it's interesting how suddenly they just stop calling you, or they stop, you know, being interested in magic suddenly. And it's just, and you know, and I've got like at least five of them right now who I'm trying desperately to reach. And, you know, one of them is Jack Kent Tiller. He's right here in Las Vegas, and I would love to be able to reach out to him. And he's actually one of my best friends. The last time I was here earlier in the year, I got to see him once. But after that, I have tried to reach him like during the pandemic and stuff like that, and never were his phone calls ever returned or anything like that. And to this day, I still haven't been able to reach him. I know he's still alive and kicking. I just don't know why he's.
You're just going to need to go and knock on his door. That's maybe the best way you can do it.
Maybe. Yeah, exactly.
There's some guys who have been there and done that have the stories. They're the ones you want to talk to. They're the ones that are going to give you your information that'd save you 10 years of your life, you know, like, if they tell you something, you're like, oh my gosh, I never thought of that. That would have taken me years to figure out. And that's what Denny's shop was all about. He wanted to give that to people. He wanted to encourage them to work, tell them, you know, this is the right way to do it. There's a wrong way and a right way. And, you know, I want you to have.
Well, he always considered himself to be of the old school from the standpoint of books, not DVDs or videotapes at the time.
Yeah, I mean, you can watch a DVD and that's fine. And he got around to, you know, accepting that, you know, begrudgingly. But, you know, when you learn from a DVD, you end up copying the guy on the DVD. Like, just inherently, you end up soaking up the mannerisms of that guy. Whereas if you learn it from a book, you're using your imagination to fill in the gaps and you come out. You know, your inner comes out. So use both, but I would say learn it from the book first, like Denny did, and then watch the DVD later. You know, after you've been watching Harry Potter. If you watch Harry Potter, that's the director's version of Harry Potter. If you read the book first, you've got your own version, and then you go watch the video. You know,
taking the words out of my mouth. That was exactly the story I was going to be telling when I went to see the first Harry Potter movie, that there was a young man sitting next to me who was, I don't know, 11 years or 12 years old. And we were talking about the movie, and he said, I said, are you excited? He said, well, kind of. He said, because I'll never be able to see Harry Potter the same way again after I have imagined him to be this character. This to look like this from my reading the book, but now to see somebody on the big screen, that will be now my new model of who I think Harry Potter should be.
Yeah, that's really sad when you think about it. It's great that kid was that aware.
He was that prescient at that age. Yeah.
Right.
Well, I know there have to be some stories that are,
you know, I just want to say, Scott, you did a really great job on this book. The only thing is it doesn't smell like cigarettes.
Yeah. That's the only thing that's missing. Yes.
Or pig crap.
Right. Yeah.
Doesn't smell like a ginge.
You can't have it all.
Yeah.
I remember wrapping the books.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say the very thing you were going to say, Puck, about wrapping the book and having the pig.
Yeah, we used to wrap the books in the shop, and Denny, because people would come and complain, so he got tired of it, so he started wrapping the books, but it didn't make a difference. They still stunk like a dinch. You know? I mean,
for example, let me show you a little video. This is what Denny would do hanging around the shop. Here, check this out.
Okay. At this point, there was a video that Scott showed
of Denny Haney doing a little cigarette manipulation around the shop there. If you want to actually see that, I suggest, again, you go over to youtube.com/Texas Magician and look for this video, episode number 601, and you can see that video of Denny performing there in the context of our conversation.
So there you go. A little bit of that's what the shop was like.
That's true, and it did smell like smoke. How many packs a day did he smoke, you think?
Three or four.
No kidding.
Ever since he was 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. So going on, making it 73 years, not too bad. Not too bad.
Another thing is people had to ask before about, of course, that his shop was known as Denny and Lee, and that he started out, I guess, with Lee, that he had met in Vietnam and married, and then later he had other wives or assistants that he called Lee, or can you tell me a little bit about that story?
He never married again. He never married again.
After the first one.
Yeah, he made Denny and Lee the business model, and then he basically kept the name because he and Lee, the original Denny and Lee, were actually so successful, and they performed, I think they hit like a world record for performing at the Concord in the Catskill Mountains. They were a big Catskill Mountain act. They were very, very successful. And so after a while, he had accumulated all of these agents and he was growing under the name Denny and Lee. And back then he was sending out like a monthly newsletter. And so it was always Denny and Lee every month. And so they just decided, hey, why not just keep the name and I'll hire another assistant and hopefully she'll be Vietnamese and we'll call her Lee. And so originally they called Min Lee. And then after that, when Min kind of took her own character on stage as her own self, it just became, Denny and Lee with Vietnamese antagonist Min.
Yeah.
So, so funny. They called her a Vietnamese antagonist. It's like,
so he never referred to you as Lynn, or you never had to fill in then. Is that right?
To be Lee
as an assistant?
No, I never. I was always just that guy.
The off-page guy. Yeah.
Denny and I actually continued the show once he stopped. Once he stopped doing the illusion show, him and I would go out to the Magic Castle and perform together. And we coined the phrase Denny and Leroy was the name of the show that we did. So,
Leroy.
But here's the little, I'll show you a little quick clip of Denny and the original Lee together. This is back in the day. I think it might be at the Concord or somewhere in the Poconos, doing the Doves from the Air and then Doves to Rabbit. So check this out.
I'm going to introduce you now.
Here, as before, is where Scott inserted another clip of Denny performing that you can watch on the YouTube channel that was mentioned earlier.
That's a big-ass rabbit.
Every time I see that rabbit, I think about when Denny tells a story about the band, when he would produce it, and then he would turn it, and the rabbit would pee all over the band members.
I heard a story about Walter Blaney like that, producing his jumbo rabbit, and it was peeing on the people in the front row. They were all going, whoa, they were throwing up their hands, and he thought, oh, they were loving it, but no, they took it away.
Denny actually told me this story. One thing that Denny taught me, when I was young, I was really only like, I think 19 when I actually joined the show. I was 18 when I met him, but I was 19 when I joined the show. And I really didn't have like a father figure in my life. My dad and I were really not that close to one another. And so Denny kind of took on this role as the father figure and, unbeknownst to anybody really. And I was just a kid trying to figure out, how to find his way in life. And so Denny would just say, drop these little bits of weird wisdom in my brain. And I'd be like, really, is that true? And like, one of the things that he would say is, you never get sick on a show. And I'd be like, well, what do you mean? You mean you can't call in sick? He's like, no, you can't call in sick. You do the show and you get better while you're doing the show, and then at the end of the show you can get sick again. And I'm just like, I don't understand. And he's like, no, you just don't get sick if you do a show. You just don't get sick. And so then once, while we're on the road, I got so sick that I couldn't handle you know, the next day. Like, I couldn't even think about how I was going to function the next day. And Denny goes, here, I got a secret for you. And he goes to the store, he comes back, and he brings me a bottle of NyQuil. And he goes, chug it. And I go, what? And he goes, drink the whole thing down. You'll get knocked out tomorrow morning. You're going to feel fine. And so
wow,
I chug this bottle of NyQuil. I almost throw up just chugging this thing down. And then sure enough, I'm out like a light. And then the next day I was totally fine. It's like some weird remedy from Denny. And, you know, and it's, so it's weird because like at the time, like, again, I was like a teenager. I didn't really know how to live my life or anything like that. And Denny's like giving me all these weird nuggets of wisdom that aren't exactly like the act, you know, like what you would logically learn
like
about.
What kind of advice would he have given?
So then the other one, you know, well, like for instance, you know, the bottle, drinking the bottle of NyQuil, you know, but like at one time he got so sick that he couldn't handle it. And he was, and his nose was running and he couldn't stop from his nose running. Right. And so when it came, so basically, so he was actually, this is a story he told me from his past. So this is the time when he and Lee were doing that rabbit trick. He said that basically his nose was running so hard, he couldn't stop it. And then he said, that basically he does the dove to rabbit. When he finally brings the rabbit, he comes up, he basically comes up to kiss the rabbit. He blew his nose into the rabbit. and it looked like, he said, but it looked like I was giving the rabbit a big kiss. He blew his nose into the rabbit. And then he could continue.
Wow. Give me another rabbit. My nose is still running.
Yeah.
Is that a story that didn't make the book, I guess?
I think,
is it in there?
It might
is
be.
It in there?
I think I told you to put it in there. Did you read it in there? I might have put it in. I think it may be in there. Not told that eloquently, though.
Were there any stories that were not in the book that come from any of you guys who were thinking later, I wish I would have thought about this at the time?
Oh, yeah.
I got that.
You know, one I did that didn't make it into the book that you told me, and we had already gone to press, but the one about the cigarette as the pipe that he did to you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So Denny basically, he used a Slidini idea. And it was for the Slidini torn and restored cigarette. And there was this one moment where he would hold the two ends of the cigarette like a V, and then he'd just kind of roll and suddenly they would like restore and then it'd be a full cigarette. And that was the Slidini idea. But there's only one way that you can do that. And unless you read that book and actually know how to do that, and you know, and you're a smoker and you care, then you don't really know how it's done. And so one of the things Denny would do is he would just take, if somebody would bum a cigarette from him, he would just go, here, have you ever seen this? He'd be smoking a cigarette. He'd go, have you ever seen this one? He'd light a cigarette. And with his cigarette lit, he would like take the cigarette and he would just bend it, and it would literally bend without breaking. And he would, mm-hmm. he could literally bend it into like a U almost. Like it would literally bend would into like from an L into a U. And then he would say, and then he'd go, can you do that? And then you would do it and it would break. And he'd go, can I bum another cigarette? He'd be like, nope. And that the method to that was interesting because basically when he'd take the cigarette out, he smoked Pall Mall, so they were filterless. So he basically would stick it in his mouth, but he wet his lips beforehand.
Right.
And then he'd pretend like, oh, I'm at the wrong end. He'd turn it around to the other side. And then now he'd light the wet end. And by lighting the wet end, it would cause the tobacco to be moist as it goes through, and that therefore allowing you to actually bend the cigarette in half. But otherwise you can't do it without breaking the cigarette.
Right. Puck, you were going to say you had a story then you're thinking too.
I wasn't sure. Was it one with the when I worked at the shop with the pig poop? Is that in the book?
I don't know if that made it in there. I don't remember.
Yeah. I was working with Denny.
What was his pig's name?
Baby. He had the pig, and the pig used to poop all the time, and the pig poop was like perfectly round and brown. It was like, you know, it looked like marbles almost. But I got into the shop, and Denny was in the back, and I saw there was pig poop all over the floor. So I said, Denny, I said, baby pooped on the floor. So he came out, and he was yelling and screaming, saying, baby, what did you do? And he does some crazy. He gets on his knees. He picks up one of the poop balls. He pops it in his mouth and starts chewing it, and he's smiling, and he's got brown crap all over his teeth, and he's laughing, and I'm freaked out. I'm about to throw up. And then he runs in the back, and I'm like, oh, God, I'm thinking he's going to come back and clean it up. And he comes back with a box of Dunkin' Munchkins. He had laid these things all over the floor before I got to the shop and waited for me to come in and popped that in his mouth and ate those. But I'm like, who the hell does that? Who waits? Like, how long was he waiting for me to come to work, you know, just to do that? You know, he was crazy like that. Yeah.
What if somebody else would have come in?
Yeah. I'll tell you one story. Oh, this is a great one. Denny, baby used to sleep sometimes on the couch in the shop. Yeah. And the couch was right by the window, you know. So if you came in the door, you really didn't see the couch. You were looking at the counter in front of you.
Right, so there to the right. Yeah,
these three little black girls came in. And they was like, this is a magic shop. Show me some magic. And Denny was behind the counter. He says, oh, what do you want me to do? You want me to make something appear? And he says, yeah. He says, what do you want me to make appear? And it says, what about a pig?
Oh, no.
We just looked at each other. We was like, oh, we can't get better than this, you know?
Yeah.
And Denny goes, and he points to the couch. The girls look at the couch. They see that pig. They scream. They run out the shop. We didn't see them. They never came back.
That's probably still telling that story to this day.
Yeah.
Scott, what about you? Do you have one also that didn't quite make it into the book?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. It didn't make it into the book. There's the one that I think is great is where we were Puck was we all had like little mishaps in our times working with Denny. Mine was
mine usually involved driving.
Yours usually involved like getting to fill up the diesel engine with gas and running out of gas and diesel on 95 headed up to New York Science Center. I remember that one.
Ran out of gas?
You get gas now? But anyway, so mine was...
That's because his gas gauge didn't work, and we had to, like, time it right. Because his gas gauge didn't work.
So, but anyway, yeah, I had to help lift Min up onto the swords and balance her for the sword. Well, yeah. For some reason, I lost the balance, and I dropped her, and she kind of went thud on the ground, perfectly stiff, right? Never woke up. Getting her off the swords, and then Denny just like I stood her back up, and Denny snapped, and she came back to life, and then chewed me out after the show. And Puck, one time I remember Puck, your very first appearance. Tell him what happened.
Oh my gosh! I learned the show on the way to the gig in the van, so I really didn't know much about the show. And there's this one part where he does the sword suspension.
Denny never taught you stuff in advance. He would always do it on the freaking day of the show. It was like we're on the same day we're learning the trick.
Yeah.
I guess it would be fresh in your memory.
Yeah. So I'm in the show. The first thing that happened was they do the legs table thing, you know, where you have the bottles and Min brings out the table and one of the legs falls off, you know, and he says, oh, you know, and then the other leg falls off. Well, the leg fell off and I was new to magic. I ran out on stage and picked it up to try and help him. And Min was like, no, that's part of the show.
It's part of the bit.
Yeah, I was all messed up. So then I got to the sword suspension and I'm supposed to jump out as a ninja when the Greatest of Lost Art music comes on. So I jump out and I'm swinging this sword. And all of a sudden, the damn thing broke. The sword broke right off the handle. I'm sitting there with a handle. The sword went flying on the stage. Oh, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm thinking I broke the gimmick sword. I'm thinking, oh man, he's not gonna be able to float. So I'm freaked out and stuff. But anyway, that was my my first, and that show happens to be on the videotape that he sold back in the day of the show. My first
video that was the show of record that Denny sold out of his shop. You can see Puck doing the ninja, and there goes the sword into the audience. Yeah. Bam! Well, yeah.
Did
and
it was go so in the audience funny. Or across the stage.
I think it went out towards the audience, like off the stage.
The audience. Yeah. And I remember that after that, it was so funny because there was so many magicians in the audience. They were dying laughing. So that He was trying to figure out how to put it in the show, how to have like
make it
sword,
part of the bit, yeah.
Make it come off all the time. But
and that's
yeah,
what made Denny. Together. That's what made Denny so really good. Denny and Min, their combination together, because the show, you know, you would come up with something, or the audience would say something funny, or something would happen, and the van rides to the gigs. I mean, you know, Alon and Puck can tell you. Came up with ideas, and then that night we would try it, and if it worked, it was great, and it made it in the show. If it didn't work, we changed it, we tweaked it, we talked about it on the way to the next gig, and you add these things, and slowly over your career you build up this great array of different bits that call back and talk to each other and make perfect sense. And you know, that's just how it's done. It's slowly building the act over time.
Yeah, that's always how it worked. It was like we always
shows? Yeah, go on the way to corporate shows too. Like he would customize.
Yeah, no matter what, it was always on the road. It was he drove everywhere. He would rarely fly, and they would always, the two of them would always jam on ideas, and their ideas were mostly comedy oriented. They weren't like really method oriented. More so like, how do we take this? You know, Denny sort of saw it as you know, his magic was already there. So the only thing he really needed to work on was just, you know, making it entertaining and making it fun for people. And he enjoyed the process of, you know, coming up with jokes and making it, you know, authentic and making it about the character between him and Min so much that, that really became the focus of his show. And in fact, I have to say, it's really something that I work on. You know, I mean, it's funny because of all the three of us, I'm the only one of them that turned into a full-fledged mentalist. And but as a mentalist, I incorporate.
And the other one decided to choose success.
He knew you were going to say that.
Oh, that's funny.
But it's funny because these days I don't really think of, I mean, I have Denny's formula so ingrained in my system that it doesn't matter what I do. It's really more the process of how I'm doing what I'm doing, which is to say, you know, I perform my show and I know that my show is going to go well no matter who I'm performing for. And so like whether, and it's funny because as a mentalist, you know, people go, you can't do mentalism for kids. You can't do mentalism for, you know, certain types of people don't like mentalism. And my feeling is, you know, I do what I do, whether you call it mentalism or magic or whatever you want to call it. The important thing is how I present what I do. And so if you're an audience of children, I'm going to present it in such a way that it's going to be clear for them to understand what I'm talking about. And if it's going to be, you know, freaking brain surgery victims, which I've done before, you know, I'm going to have to be even more clear when sometimes I'm performing for Alzheimer's Association, you know, fundraisers and stuff. And it's just a different vibe. And then sometimes I'm in Vegas and then I can bring out the dick jokes. So it's
Denny was able to adapt to any audience like that because
he
put in the work. He knows the material inside and out, studied, practiced, all of that done. Now you can be free to change little things, tweak things here and there to be able to work for any audiences. His big thing in the late 80s, early 90s when he left the colleges was customized events for corporations. So he would have to create this custom magic trick if they were introducing a trip to Hawaii to give away. He would create this whole little thing about Hawaii, and he used a costume trunk, right? So that became, you know, it was a costume. We could go to France, we could go to Hawaii, or we could go to, you know, Japan, wherever. So the idea that Denny knew all of his stuff really solid, he had a good foundation in the history of magic, so he was able to customize things, he was able to change things on the fly, and that's the kind of stuff that's in the book that he talks about. It's like, You have to first know your craft and know your art, and then you're able to go and make it entertaining and to make it, you know, and to be able to change it and adapt it to different audiences.
Yeah. I like the way that the book is structured from the standpoint it talks about his history from the very beginning. And
yeah, it's basically broken into five parts, really. The biography, and then his core act, the nine tricks that are his core act, the razor blades, the egg bag, the multiplying bottles, all the hard-hitting stuff.
Newspaper.
The newspaper tear. Then there's the specialties, things like the Lloyd candles, the billiard balls, the bullet catch. Not a lot of people know Denny did the bullet catch, but he did and had a hell of a method. Then it's
It's worth the price of the book just for the bullet catch. And, you know, I mean, like, if anybody is working on a bullet catch, you would do yourself so much good to buy this book and actually learn about the way Denny did it, because it was such a worker. He did it like over 300 times, I'm sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. And then the last part is his thoughts on magic, basically his philosophy, how to get a standing ovation, how to learn magic the right way, how to buy magic the right way, how to make an entrance on stage, all the books you should have in your working library. Speaking of bullet catch, I'll play you a real quick clip of Denny's bullet catch. Check this out. You're gonna like this. Not a lot of people have ever seen him do this. So
yeah, he was truly a showman on this.
Members of Maryland Public Television.
I will open my mouth and release the handkerchief. It will fall to the ground. As it falls, you are to squeeze the trigger and fire the round.
Will this master illusionist bite the bullet? Find out next on Weeks Alive.
So it looks like his bullet catch that has the glass pane there is somewhat similar to Banachek's idea with what Penn and Teller do.
That predates Banachek, predates Penn and Teller. That goes all the way back to Christopher.
I was in the show when Penn and Teller came to see us for the first time doing the bullet catch. I remember. I don't know how much Denny and Lee actually influenced Penn and Teller to decide to do the bullet catch. I know Banachek helped them with it.
But remember Teller being in the audience?
I do remember them in the audience, yeah.
Because Teller denies it to this day, just so you know.
Oh, really?
But anyway, yeah, it goes back to Milbourne Christopher, the Festival of Magic, 1955. I think it's 55. When Hen Fetch, all from Baltimore, Milbourne Christopher, all went down to the basement of the place where Fetch worked and practiced that particular type of method, and put holes in the BG&E walls in the basement, and then pushed equipment back in front of it to hide it. And if you look, I think you can find it on YouTube. It's Milbourne Christopher doing the bullet catch on the Festival of Magic. So yeah, but Denny researched the bullet catch, and that particular method that Christopher actually ended up using, in Denny's notes in big red letters, it says, unreliable, will not work as a real road trick.
So, don't ever do it.
Don't ever try it.
He used to practice. He practiced the bullet catch, he said, in the woods with his brother Greg.
Yep.
Did you have that in the book?
Yep. The two of them went out to the woods with a 30-30 break action and worked on it. He studied Christopher. He studied Anneman. He studied everything that had been written, Orville Meyer, everything that had been written on the bullet catch, and came up with one hell of a method.
He really did have one hell of a method. It was so solid and it was so solid that he could literally do it at every college that we went to. And
I was about to say they probably wouldn't do that in colleges today.
Up until Penn and Teller.
No, it wouldn't be as.
Penn and Teller started doing it. Denny had done it more than any other magician in history, over 300, 400 times, because most guys did it just as a publicity thing. Denny did it in his act regularly.
Yeah. Denny told me the reason why he stopped doing it is because he's caught some kid stuffing like paper clips and all kind of crap in the muzzle when they went to inspect the gun. And then he was like, nah, it's going to get risky. Yep.
That's it. I'm out. It happened twice. He caught it twice. The first one he went and kept doing and did it anyway. And the last one he was like, all right, he had to stop the show. And then that was it. We're done. We're not doing it anymore.
Wow. Yeah. When you can't depend upon your volunteers to. They're trying to
That's
kill you.
College kids for you.
Yeah.
Didn't one of them kill Houdini, basically, from McGill University?
Well, that goes all the way back. Yep, good point. I think also that the detail, the level of detail that you go into, with the egg bag and all the other things, it's not just a few pages, but the intricate photos and everything that are in there that gives a great description on how to do it and his scripting and everything else and the reasons. I thought that was just pretty phenomenal. It was
was just
that's what Denny was into. He was into every little detail, a little thing. Oh, I heard this from Alan Jackson, or I heard this from Billy McComb, or this thing stuck here. And every little thing informed, you know, and made that trick better and better, as with all the stuff he did. Denny was a student of history, as, you know, Alan and Puck can tell you. We've heard all the stories. Every little piece of stuff I could remember, recall, or had him tell went into that book. So that if you're going to do a trick like something in the book, you'll have all that there, all of that, I guess, collected wisdom there. Yeah.
I saw all three of you guys work with Denny one time at Abbott's get together, and that was a fun time and a fun show. And is there a show or something, a memory that you have collectively that was a particularly great memory, or a show that you did? It's like, that was the one that I'll always remember and go to my grave thinking we had the ultimate right there.
That one was great. The Abbott's thing. We all had a blast.
Yeah. And he shocked the hell out of the audience too. Cause they just, you know, Denny got up to do the trunk and he was like, you know, I'm 76 years old. I can't do this stuff anymore. So I passed it on to the, you know, to the young guys, and they do it now. And at the end, he came out of that trunk and just nobody saw it coming. And he had that damn, that wrinkled Joker costume on and that cigarette. Yeah. But the funny thing about rehearsing that was crazy, because Denny hadn't done it in years, and his back was always messed up. So trying to rehearse it, that was the fun part, was watching Denny in all that pain.
Hey, what's up with magicians not washing their costumes?
That Joker could walk on its own, man. That Joker costume.
Oh my God.
I had to wear it the last, we did a tribute show to Denny at Abbott's. Yeah. And we did the trunk, and I came out in Denny's wrinkled Joker suit, and it smelled just like Denny. Yeah, it was pretty bad, man.
Lysol to it beforehand.
Yeah, so
there's not enough Febreze in the world. Like, you know, you got to do like the dancers on the ship. The dancers on the ship get vodka and water and spray it on there. You got to put something heavy duty, man. It was disgusting. It was nasty, man. I got out of that thing fast as I could.
That's funny. A little behind the scene smell, I can imagine.
Yeah, we did a tribute show to Denny, and we used Min hadn't done the show in 20 plus years, and we did it all together, and Min did all the illusions, and it was like it was a nice closure to Denny's legacy of all of us, you know, his assistants all getting up there and doing the show
on that scene at that same convention at the Magic Graveyard.
Yeah, and he his wish was to be buried in Colon. That just sounds awkward. Buried in Colon. anyway, so yeah, we did. And it's like that Joe, the wrinkled Joker costume. It's like I did the chop cup, and the three potatoes came out, and Puck said, "Wow, those potatoes remind me of Denny's balls." I said, "What? Denny's balls are that big?" I said, "No, they're that dirty." See, that's the kind of humor Denny was into, and there's a lot of dirty words in the book too, so kids, ask your parents if you can buy that book.
Well, I tell you, this has been delightful, but before we close, I wanted to find out, since as well as you knew him, I always like to close, since the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, what it is that may have been his philosophy of life. What magic word or words would he have shared with others as a legacy? It was important to him.
It's in Tarbell.
Yeah, it's in Tarbell.
That's his epitaph. It's in Tarbell.
I would say, pass it down. That was his
that's thing. Right.
He always wanted to pass it
right
down.
Right there. It's what it said. I told you.
It's Tarbell.
Right there on his headstone.
And he was he loved to read. So if you had to sum it up to one word, it would probably be read. I don't know if you two would agree with me, but read. The more you read, the more you know. The more you know, the smarter you get. The smarter you get, the better off you are. And Denny was all, you know, very, very big on that. So read is I think, the bottom line.
That was something Roger Clouse had always told me early on. The three best things I could tell you is to read, read, and read.
Yep.
To do all that. Well, listen, guys, thank you very much. I appreciate each and every one of you being on here and helping to tell us about the legacy that is Denny and Lee. And thanks also then, Scott Alexander, for putting the book together and letting us, and also the rest of the crew over here. Alan, great seeing you then as well. Again, my friend.
There it is.
There's the book. It's right there.
It's heavy. You could take somebody out with that thing.
It is. It is a big book, yeah. A heavy book. That's true. Oh, you got the collector's edition over there. Is that right? You must know somebody. And Puck, it's been a pleasure to have you on here as well. Great stories. Thank you, one and all.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Puck, Alon, and Scott. And this is Scotty out.
Yeah.
Wow, that was some fun. I hope that you guys enjoyed that and you could sense the kind of fun that we were having, and certainly that those three gentlemen must have had together with Denny as they had toured with him and worked with him so closely over the years. That must have been just a hoot. And certainly, if you have not had a chance to go over and check this out, that is the video on YouTube, go and do that. You can kind of see what's happening, as well as the videos that we were talking about that were omitted from the audio portion of this. Anyhow, thank you guys again for being on this podcast this week in this episode. And also, I want to mention that we had a drawing a few weeks ago for a contest that Ken Scott had offered, a free registration to this year's Atlanta Harvest of Magic. We had drawn the name Joe Miller, and we have searched high and low, and I've asked the listeners if they could help identify him. And so, unfortunately, the time has passed, and he has not gotten back to us, so I drew another name. And the name of the new winner of the registration for this year, a free registration for one for this year's contest, is Roger Reese. Congratulations, Roger. And I have sent an information over to Ken Scott. He should be getting hold of you. And I hope that you enjoy this year's convention in Atlanta for the Harvest of Magic. Well, we have some more people who are going to be coming up this next few weeks, of course. We've got a lot of really great people who are in queue. And if you'd like to know who's going to be coming up from week to week, make sure you subscribe to our pod letter. That way we can tell you who's up each week and who's coming next week with some recommendations from our archives of some of those episodes you may have missed or might want to go back and listen to yet a second or third time. There are some real gems in there, certainly, and so I recommend that you go back and take a listen. Also, be sure to follow us on all the social platforms, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and all that kind of good stuff. And that information is over there on themagicwordpodcast.com. All righty, let's check out of here. This has been just a wonderful episode and a whole heck of a lot of fun. Hope you've enjoyed it, and I want to thank again each and every one of you for coming back week to week to listen. And so, until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember, it's in Tarbell. This is Scotty out.